and welcome to Stutter Talk. We are recording from the 34th Annual National Stuttering Association Conference in Dallas, Texas. Stutter Talk can be found at stuttertalk.com and the NSA at westutter.org. My name is Chris Constantino. I'll be your host for this episode. And I'm here with Bornwell and LJ. Bornwell, Kadabi is a PhD student at the University of Louisiana Lafayette and is originally from Zambia. And LJ Muchenje resides in Chesterfield, Virginia, where he works for the Virginia Department of Transportation as an environmental engineer. And LJ is originally from Zimbabwe. And thank you both for being on here today with me.
Thank you, Chris. It's such a pleasure to be here. Like, as I was talking to you before, Stutter Talk is one of my main shows. I actually listen to it all the time. So it's like I commute to work and things like that, and you know, when I'm in my car and I need something to listen to, Stutter Talk is one of the shows that I actually get to listen to.
Well, we're happy to have you on.
Thank you.
And Bornwell, this is your first time at an NSA conference, right?
Yes. And for me, being the first time to be at NSA, and of course, the first time to even step out of the borders of my country, and to find such a huge family of people like me who stutter, is not only a relief, but also an overwhelming experience that I have had here. Yes.
Have you, is there a local NSA chapter in Lafayette where you're from?
Yes, there is a local chapter in Louisiana. And I've been there twice, despite my school schedule. Yes, I've been there twice, and attending one such event was an eye-opener for me to see how people have advanced in not only bringing people start together, but also providing this major support that we all need.
Yeah, I think I forgot to mention when I was introducing you, Bornwell,
yes,
what you're studying. Do you want to tell everybody what you're studying?
Oh yes. apparently, I am like you said, I'm from Africa, Zambia in particular, and came over here specifically to do speech and language pathology, specializing in fluency disorders, and I am actually focusing on stuttering, which I hope to do a study into at the end of the program. So in my country, this field of speech and language pathology is not there as I at the moment as I speak. So the hope is to, God willing, to go back home and establish the field of speech and language pathology.
That sounds both exciting and ambitious.
Yeah, they're ambitious. Yes.
Is there LJ? What were the resources like for you growing up in Zimbabwe, what is it similar to Zambia?
Yeah, so geographically speaking, Zimbabwe and Zambia, they're like right next to each other. I want to say back in the day before Zimbabwe gained independence, wasn't it one thing? Like, it was Southern Rhodesia and Northern Rhodesia?
Yes, Northern Rhodesia was Zambia, then Southern Rhodesia was Zimbabwe.
Yeah, so it was like one country in a sense, you know. Yes. So when you talk about culture, when you talk about the people, like when you're looking at me and Bonwo, don't we look alike? Don't we look like we're brothers or cousins?
Yes.
You know, you guys look nothing alike.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah. So when it comes to the culture, though, there's a lot of similarities there, and also the way we grew up, you know. I just met Bonwo today, you know, but in that the short conversations that we have, you know, we have kind of clicked already, you know, because we have that background, you know. So getting into speech pathology, growing up, you know, we didn't have anything like that. I mean, we still don't have anything like that, you know. So I'm really excited, you know, when I see someone like Bonwell here, you know, coming all the way from Zambia. You know, it is a great step forward, actually, you know, because I think back my growing up, you know, in early grade schools, you know, teachers didn't know what to do with me. You know, I talk to my mom. You know, my parents are here right now. I talk to them often, and they just tell stories like, yeah, teachers didn't know what to do with you. You know, they didn't know how to handle the starter. You know, so it actually took like one teacher. You know, there's this one teacher I can never really forget her. You know, it's that one teacher who was able to identify, you know, like there's nothing wrong with this child. You know, he just stutters. You know, so the main thing in Africa, you know, it's just the lack of education. You know, people are just not educated when it comes to this subject of stuttering.
When was the first time, LJ, you met another person who stuttered?
Oh yeah, so actually my family, I have a family of people who stutter. Not in my immediate family, you know, but my great uncle, he's late now, he used to stutter. His son used to stutter as well, and then my mom's side, my grandmother, she used to stutter, but not as much. She only stuttered when she was angry. You know, when she stuttered, you know, something is wrong. You did something.
You made a mistake.
Yeah, you knew you made a mistake. You did something. Grandma is not happy. Yeah, but yeah. So that was my experience with stuttering. But it's something that we never really talked about.
Huh?
Yeah.
How about you, Bonwell? When was the first time you met somebody?
The first time I met somebody who stutters was when I was in my 60th grade.
Okay.
Yes, when I was in my 60th grade in the countryside, in the village, that's when I met somebody who really used to block. Yes, and he had long blocks. But then, like Ojo said, there is lack of education, I think, generally speaking, in my country, like he's the case in Zimbabwe. There is this lack of education about the phenomenon of stuttering. Very few people fully understand what it is. And it is shrouded in myths, you know. There are a lot of stories behind that, traditional stories. So people have a lot of visions about what it is. So even when I met this person for the first time, the stories that were going around in the compounds were that person was bewitched.
Okay.
Yes, that he was bewitched. And when somebody says you are bewitched, people try to keep a distance, you know. And at the same time, even those who would want maybe to like show some interest in you, culturally they would refrain. So indirectly you are on your own. Indirectly you are on your own. And the other thing is that somebody who stutters is cursed. Yes. So, and that also applied to me. That's what people used to tell me, that I am cursed. Now, once that label is put on you, it is not only hard for you to deal with, but also hard for the immediate family. Yes. So that person that I met was an elderly person, and it's not common to meet people who stutter like that, you know. At the moment, in Zambia, there is no study, to my knowledge, that has been conducted to establish the prevalence and the incidence of stuttering. That is yet to be established. But we can just assume that given the world figures, and if we were to break down the world figures to localize them to national figures, it is also possible that the number of people who stutter in Zambia are relatively a good number.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have a question about when you were told you were cursed.
Yes.
Did you feel, yes, this must be what's happening, I have a curse? Or did you feel they don't understand, it's different, it's something else? How did you feel about that?
The emotions at that moment were emotions of denial, both of the situation itself, especially that I was not a person who was born stuttering. For me, it's something that happened when I was in my sixth grade. Yes, going into my seventh grade. So when I looked back, I was growing up as somebody who never used to stutter, and then suddenly I am stuttering. So it's difficult to refute that I'm not cursed, you know. Because there isn't much information to avail me by somebody that this is just a condition that has nothing to do with the curse. And even the parents, by then my biological parents were already dead, but even my aunt and my uncle had little, if any, information about the whole thing. So they, in a way, accepted what society said.
Well, yes.
So it was really very traumatizing for me.
I would imagine. Yeah. How do you lift a curse? What was the next step then?
When somebody says you are cursed, very often they attribute that to some kind of a hidden sin that you might have done or your parents might have done, and as a cause.
Mm-hmm.
So what that makes you feel is you begin to feel a sense of guilt that probably you have contributed to, maybe, for example, in my case, the dying of the parents.
Mm. Wow.
You have contributed to the dying of the parents. So you ask yourself, what is wrong with me? Could I be the cause of all the troubles in my family? Now, it is very, very difficult to carry that burden every day in a situation where no one is coming out to help you and tell you that actually you are not the cause.
And this is all when you're a child.
This is when I was just a child, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also I just wanted to add, you know, yeah, it's very difficult, you know, if people are misinformed, one, you know, and then the second thing, that the support system is not there, you yes. know, there is no one you can really talk to about it. And even the closest people that you have, they don't have a clue of what's going on, you know. So you ask the question, like, how do you come out of that curse? You know, I didn't go through what he did, but, you know, most, I don't know if I can put a blanket statement, but the majority of Africans that I know, they have this resilience in them. You know, if you want to do something, if you want to succeed, you know, you have a vision in front of you, no matter what people say, you know, you keep on looking forward, you know, towards what you're trying to get to, you know. And I think Bonwo here is a very good example of that with the story that he just shared. You know, the fact that he beat all those odds and he's actually here, you know, doing a PhD, you know, and the PhD he's doing is not only going to help him, but he's going to help the future generation of kids along, you know, because I can see this happening again and again. I'm sure there are many kids in Zambia, there are many kids in Zimbabwe, there are many kids in other parts of Africa, you know, that are going through the same thing, and, you know, you hear those same stories. So hopefully, you know, this is what Bonwo is doing is planting a seed, and I'm sure that there will be a change.
Yeah. Interested in with my own research is what the experience of stuttering is like subjectively, and I'm wondering if stuttering in different places feels different, if the people react differently in different places, if openly stuttering is harder in some places than in others. Have you experienced any differences in your travels with that? Is it tougher to be open in some places than in others?
Yeah, so for me, I'll tell you my experience. You know, I speak in a native language. You know, that's what I grew up speaking. We also spoke English as well in school. You know, but the first language that I started speaking was that native language. And as far as I can remember, I always stuttered. You know, and to this day, if I have to speak in my native language, my stuttering is more severe. And if I'm in a situation where kind of reminds me of how I grew up, you know, like if I go home and I'm in that atmosphere, no matter how I try to control it, it's just going to come out. You know, there are some times where I can't even say a word. You know, and I'm thinking that it has to definitely it has to do with what happened in the past. It has to do with the environment. This is just my own observations. You know, if I'm in that environment that reminds me of my past, my stuttering just gets worse. And also other stories that I've heard in talking, you know, to my parents and stuff. The uncle that I talked to about that, he used to stutter. I hear that at one point he wanted to be a teacher. He wanted to be a teacher, and the reason why he couldn't be a teacher is because of his stutter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's kind of difficult when you have cultures like that that tell you that you cannot do certain things because of your stutter. You know, it's not even that they try to hide it. They try to hide you to tell you some other reason. They just tell you blank in your face, you know, like you can't be a doctor because you stutter. You cannot be a teacher because you stutter.
Yeah.
You know, so being in that environment, and then of course, you know, if you have people who don't know what's going on, and growing up with friends, I had friends like in high school. I mean, they would kind of laugh, you know, laughing that I stutter. You know, some did, and it affected me somehow in a way. And so each time I think about that, or each time I'm in a situation, like if I go back to Zimbabwe, it just kind of reminds me of all that, and I feel that I struggle more. I feel that my stuttering comes out more. Actually,
it's funny how people and places have an effect on us, and I'm the same way. When I talk to, if I run into an old friend who I haven't seen since I was a kid, I turn back into a kid. Yeah. The same stutter behaviors happen.
Yeah.
Stuff I haven't done in years, yeah. Like these hard blocks,
yeah.
Not able to make eye contact. Yeah. All this old stuff I thought I had dealt with and was in my past. It's like that person or that place is like a time machine or something.
And just to agree with the point that you have brought out and what Jay has just been telling us here. In some places, stuttering is difficult to deal with based on the prevailing cultural norms and beliefs that make up that system of that particular nation. I would, for example, give the difference in perception between the American people, those who do not study, and the Zambian people who do not start. I would say because of the presence of the field of speech and language pathology for years here in the United States, even those who are not very, very knowledgeable here in the United States about stuttering, for example, at least they have heard even rumors about stuttering, which in a way reduces the burden of a person who stutters, because one, there is a support system in place. There are institutions. For example, we are here at National Stuttering Association. This, like you said in the other presentation, is an ally in itself that provides support to people who stutter. And people who stutter draw strength from this institution. And when they go out, they meet speech and language pathologists who in their individual capacities also provide support, emotional and psychological support. So when a person who stutters goes out, for example, maybe to place an order at lunchtime, psychologically is equipped, is not vulnerable, is equipped, he has this defense system already in place, and when he is dealing with the people, at least he knows that to a certain degree he's dealing with people that have some basic knowledge about my condition, and that relationship is bearable compared to a situation where you are living in a society that does not even fully understand stuttering, and there is no advocacy whatsoever. There is no speech and language pathologist. Not even the government institutions are in place to even mention a word stuttering. And then, besides that, you have a culture that looks at every disorder, not only disfluency, but any other disorder, and attribute it to myths, attribute it to maybe demons. So already you have a society that has an interpretation of disorder that is not supported by research. Even the family members do not fully understand it. They cannot explain it in a way that would tally with the way the world knows stuttering. So the person who stutters in such a society is somebody who is left on his or her own. Because there is basically no system to support him. So in that context, stuttering, in my view, is more burdensome in such societies than it is, for example, in the United States of America. I'm not demeaning the fact that at individual levels, people here who stutter in the United States go through a lot of psychological and emotional problems because of the condition of stuttering. But if we were to weigh the two, I would say people who are in a way living in ignorance about stuttering are more burdened.
Yeah. As I listen to both of you, this idea about the power of knowledge is coming up again and again and again. And it strikes me that perhaps we sort of, in America, take it for granted that there's a field, speech-language pathology, yes, that studies stuttering and works with people who stutter, and that people out on the street, they sometimes have weird notions of stuttering, but they're a little bit more knowledgeable.
Yes.
And that that little bit of knowledge might help a whole lot.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Definitely. The other thing I wanted to say is, Bono was saying, you know, I'm always for kids, you know, so if you take an example, a child who stutters, who grows up in the U.S., and they're coming to something like the NSA conference, they see a successful doctor, you know, in an individual who's actually a doctor who stutters. They see an entrepreneur, you know, a successful person who actually started his or her own business, and they stutter. They see a successful engineer, you know, in the trade, who still stutters. You know, when you take that and you compare it to someone who's raised in a culture where they're told, you cannot do this because you stutter. You cannot be a teacher because you stutter. You cannot be a doctor because you stutter. I mean, immediately the odds are weighing heavily against them. Yeah. Against them, you know. How can you aim for something that you don't see? You know, you gotta see an example.
LJ, So you became an engineer. When you were growing up, did you think that was possible?
To be honest with you, I attribute this to my uncle, actually. I have an uncle who's an engineer as well. He's very successful in what he does, you know. So I was close to him, and I always wanted to be an engineer because he is. You know, so stuttering was there, but I never really fully thought of it like that it's going to stop me. In Zimbabwe, I mean, the culture in Zimbabwe, it's not as outgoing as the U.S. I can probably count the number of times that I gave presentations in school, in class. I don't think they're more than five, because okay. it's not stressed upon. So even though I started, I guess I was fluent because I didn't have to talk. I didn't have to make presentations in front of people. So I never quite thought about it, you know. So it only hit me when I actually came in the U.S.
That's ironic.
Yeah, then I started doubting myself. I was like, is this really possible? You know, because you take classes, you got speech classes, you got to do this, you got to do that, and, you know, but at the end of the day, it's like, if I don't do this, what else am I going to do? Yeah. Yeah, so I didn't have an option but to do it.
Bornwell, it's interesting that in America, the field of speech language pathology was started by people who stutter.
Yes.
Who were sick and tired of not having help, right? And they were like, we're gonna study this, and we're gonna try to get a better grasp on what this is.
Yes.
And in you, I see the same spirit.
Wow.
Right? You're a person who stutters, who sees a need for help for people who stutter.
Yes.
And it's starting a field is what your goal is in Zambia, right?
Right. And it is sometimes very, very interesting how events happen, you know. I've, all my life, I think I've been a teacher. And because of my stuttering, I was driven into becoming a teacher of special educational needs.
Wow.
One, just as a way of demonstrating to myself that I can help myself and relate well with the people who are probably going through what I'm going through. So who are these people? So I went into special education. And there I found myself a sense of satisfaction. Because for me, I was not just like working for pay. I was like working for this bigger thing than money. Helping in my fellow human beings to like reach their self-actualization in their own way. Then because of that, I found myself in the program of speech and language pathology when it was introduced. Okay. And here I am. Previously had no idea that there was even a field.
Wow.
Specifically dedicated to stuttering. I just learned about that recently, in the very past few years. So that has added another sense of mission to me as an individual. It has given me a reason to live, if I may put it that way, because I see myself like trying to live for just this mission. Trying to live for just this mission, because when I look at what I have gone through, the anxieties that have gripped me to the point of even failure to say what I want to say, and in most cases when it matters most, it's like I fail myself and I get angry with myself. Now, that is probably the same way that other kids and other people back home who do not even have the idea that there is such an institution like National Stuttering Organization existing somewhere, who have no link to any kind of support, but they are out there. And those are the people that, God willing, I would love to reach out and form a group. It will be the biggest achievement ever if I can even meet with five of them. And for me, that will be the National Stuttering Association. For me, that will be the National Stuttering Association.
Great.
If we
that's
can
great.
Just
that's
meet
great.
Five of us and we can just share our stories, I know how powerful that is, because that is exactly what has happened to me. For the first time stepping into a conference like this one, and it reminds me of all the emotions that I have harbored over the years, that I have stored up inside my heart, which I have never shared with anybody. Because, I mean, there was probably no one to share with who can relate with me at this kind of level. And I come to meet friends like you and OJ here. What a relief in the first place. What a relief.
The listeners can't see how big of a smile I have on my face.
we all have big smiles. Yeah.
But isn't it incredible that we're from such different parts of the world?
Yeah.
You guys are from Southern Africa?
Yes.
I'm from New York, upstate New York.
Yes.
Yet this one thing that we've all experienced can tie us so tightly together.
That's right. Yes. I was having that same conversation with someone else during lunch today. You know, you having probably, it's safe to say because of this NSA, I have pretty much met everybody from every continent who started.
Yes.
And the interesting thing is like we might not look alike, but the stories are the same. They are the same. The anxieties, the struggles, and all that stuff is the same. It's very fascinating to me, actually.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an excellent note to end this conversation on. I want to thank Bornwell and LJ for talking with me today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chris.
And we're going to get back downstairs.
Sure.
So bye-bye.
All right, bye.